Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This is a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Apollo Men's Health. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
1185 is saying Aaron Rodgers was not wearing a mask on the sideline. He was not following protocol for unvaccinated players. But he also didn't lie about it, right?
He got tested every day, which meant he didn't during the game action. It was after the game that he was supposed to, and in the media availability, where he was supposed to either do the Zoom chat or wear a mask. That's where it gets whatever your 1-1 text. Put your name on if you're going to text and own it so that you can have a conversation and not hide behind some keyboard. How about that?
So the name's going to change that? That they're
no, but I already gave you the answer to his text.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Time now for the 12 days of Texans Christmas. Today's day number 3. First day was Brendan telling us that he wants a franchise quarterback on the first day of Texans Christmas. Yesterday, on the second day of Texans Christmas, legal resolution to Deshaun Watson saga. What is your third day of Texans Christmas?
Whether you call him the Grinch or the elf on the shelf, in order to have a happy holiday season on the 12 days of Texans and be a good franchise going forward, Jack Easterby must go. He must be gone. The Grinch must be eliminated. The elf on the shelf must be dusted off. He, no longer a member of the Texans organization, creates progress, hope, and happiness as opposed to anything else that we will come up on this list.
Why is he the elf on the shelf?
Because look at his head and look at how he looks. He looks like a light bulb. And when he talks,
long and slim.
I don't know about that, but I mean, he looks creepy. If you painted him green, he could look like the Grinch. He could, if you gave him a suit, he could look like an elf. But I know the one thing is he's evil, and he's not doing anything good for this franchise, and he has no resume that says he should be on the football side. And everybody you talk to nationally and locally that looks at that franchise says, I don't want to deal with that dude.
I really thought that you would say that you'd wait for that until the 12th day.
No, I thought one of you guys would take that one really quick, and so before it was taken off the shelf, I took it off the shelf by pointing my finger directly where it needs to be pointed and get the crosshairs on the guy that needs to go. You talk about a guy. If you're a Texans fan, you say, I hate what Bill O'Brien did. Well, guess what? The only guy that was left over from, besides Tim Kelly, and we've already talked about him, but the only guy of significance that was left over from the Bill O'Brien era is Jack Easterby. And since then, what's he done? He hasn't been eliminated. He's been elevated. And all he gets is more responsibilities, more time around the team, more opportunities to be involved in decision-making or whatever the hell they're doing, both business-wise and football-wise, and nothing's working out. So process of elimination, Jack must go. He's going to get his money anyway, and he's grossly overpaid to be the minister of whatever you call him over there, minister of football and the team chaplain and whatever else he's doing to collect that multi-million dollar contract. He's got to go.
I said back in a previous radio life that he was way too underqualified to be in his current role before anybody else said it. I got in a little bit of trouble whenever I said that back in a previous
radio life. That's because you were under the sharp restrictions of the elimination highway of
flagship?
AM radio.
Should we call it that?
Sure.
Here's, like, to play devil's advocate here. Not that I necessarily agree with what I'm about to say, but to play devil's advocate. Do you still believe he's that involved with what the Texans are doing? Like, if he's not involved in the 53, if he's not making roster moves, if he's not influencing Nick Caserio on what he's trying to do, how much influence and how much does the Jack Easterby effect even have anymore?
Well, there's multiple ways that I can answer that. One is he's still the best friend of the owner. And so, therefore, whatever he wants, he's going to get, whether it's ultimately because Nick Caserio either wanted him to or someone tells him he has to. But I think that factors in. I think the other thing that factors in is, again, as we talked about when Nick Caserio was a name that wasn't on the five names that was on the list provided by the consulting firm of who should be the next general manager of this team. He owes him one. He owes him a solid. They've worked together in New England. So whether it's forced or Caserio is actually doing what he feels like he should do for a guy that got him this gig, I believe that he is involved. I believe that he still has a say. I believe that he still, as we've seen in the locker room and around the players from practice to the locker room to the game days to after games, and that is a bad, bad precedent to continue to keep setting for the rest of the league, for agents, for players, for everybody involved.
See, I think it's more symbolism than anything else because you're right. Like, if Jack Easterby was let go today, the city would throw a parade on Kirby. Like, they would be incredibly happy. But and that's why, to me, it's more symbolism than anything else because now you're moving in a different direction. You're willing to cut ties with what is a dark day in the Houston Texans' history of their franchise. So the city would love it. The city would be absolutely over the moon if you got rid of Jack Easterby. And to me, that's where it carries more weight. Like, it carries more weight, at least in front of, like, the fans and the people who pay attention to the Texans and people that like the Texans, want to root for the Texans. Like, to me, that cuts ties with the past, and that's what the city wants. Like, they feel like Easterby has influenced all the bad in this organization. They still feel like he has influence. I'm not sure how much he does, but to me, it's the symbolism. Like, it's almost the psyche part of anything else, more than, like, the actual physical part of
it. Well, we've said that from a fan's perspective, and we encourage them, don't buy the jerseys, don't go to games, don't buy the tickets, and we've seen that diminish to the fact that there's no longer a waiting list and they're trying to sell group tickets, but mostly it was all primarily because of what Bill O'Brien had done, and we had to see that they had changed their ways. Now I think that Jack Easterby is, like, whether you call it symbolism, and I believe so much more than that in terms of how many hands he has involved in how many pots inside that organization in terms of affecting decision making, and he's done a lot of it on the business side too, where I look at it and go, I go back to the scenario that I said in a previous show on this station where I said, I believe right now if both Bill O'Brien and Jack Easterby walked through the front doors of your favorite grocery store and angry Texans fans were shopping, I don't know which guy they'd want to punch first. And I think it would be close to a draw because no matter how bad Bill O'Brien dug a hole for this franchise, they're still being set back on a daily basis as long as the symbolism of Jack Easterby and all that he that goes with it is still a member of that being paid by that franchise. He's got to go. I don't blame any fan that doesn't want to jump back on board until he does. And I think that that's a huge reason why this team can't get out of its own way and at least start the progression of the rebuild.
How about from another way? Like, how else can the fans jump back on board? I'm talking about wholesale. I'm not talking about the 30,000 that'll be there out of the 65 that they announced. I'm talking about wholesale. You're filling the seats. Everybody's back on board. Like, when does that happen if Jack Easterby's still around? Because I feel like you can get there if Easterby's still here. It's just going to be more difficult to do so.
It can happen if. If, because of how you play the Deshaun Watson situation out. If, and they're all big ifs. If you get maximum value for Deshaun, so you have multiple first-round picks. And in one of those picks, it doesn't have to be every pick because some of those picks are going to be non-sexy picks that just fill quality roles on the team that are going to be in positions you have to have, whether it be corners, linebackers, D-linemen, whatever the case may be. If you get yourself one guy that can be electric, that can draw eyeballs to the screen because of what he does on the field, whether it be a quarterback, a running back, a wide receiver, a guy that makes a difference and then in doing so brings positive energy both from a media perspective and a fan perspective of, whoa, I love that dude. I'm glad he's on my team. That can start the wheels turning. But there's no WD-40 and there's no turbocharging that engine until Jack Easterby exit stage left.
See, I think he can still be part of this organization and you get a majority of the fans back. It's just going to be more difficult than if you were just to cut ties. And to me, it comes down to winning. Like, the best marketing tool in all of sports, sure. And you know this because you've worked in an organization and organizations for a long, long time, is winning. Like, winning cures a lot of evil, right? It covers up a lot of warts. So if you go out and you get a franchise player, you get a couple of franchise players, and you start to see the positive direction that the organization's going in, and now you get hope that at some point maybe you're building to an AFC South champion. You're looking at building towards being a consistent playoff team where you think maybe someday in the next 5 to 7 years you could be a Super Bowl champion. I think if you can accomplish those things, you can stomach Jack Easterby on the sideline. You can stomach Jack Easterby going through the stretching drills, high-fiving all the players.
The note
but
cards,
you have to win at a high level.
See, I agree with that, Jeremy, but here's where I would counter that and say, okay, but you called him a wart. He's more of a white-headed zit that's gone all the way to a gaping infected wound that I don't know that there's any Band-Aid in America that could cover it up, or at least put some kind of a medication on it that can allow you to heal from it and move forward. I just think that he has – I don't want to say he's like a cancer in the organization, because obviously you can't when the top of the organization believes in him. But, yeah, outside of the owner – and what he doesn't know and doesn't get involved with because he's just not there enough or there with it enough to get it, is every other level of the organization looks at everything that they're doing and trying to win and trying to get the right players in and go, at some point, he's going to rear his head again. He's going to do something and be involved in something that's going to set us back. And that's where, as a Texans fan, I don't blame you if you're completely pissed off that he's still on the payroll.
The only hope that you have is that Nick Caserio is not allowing him to do that. Again, playing devil's advocate here. Like, it'd be much easier if you just knew, for peace of mind's sake, right, that he's no longer in the building. Because if he's no longer in the building, he can't influence anything. He can't, you know, put the cloud over anything. So it make it a lot easier to believe it and to have that hope. So the only thing, again, play as devil's advocate here, is that Nick Caserio is not allowing him to have any responsibility over the 53.
But here's the thing, Jeremy. You and I talk about how important communication is, especially when you're talking about it at this level of professional sports. And that's where you hope that conversations have been had on the sly, when the office is closed, when the guys are just hanging out. Caserio and Jack sit down and go, look, it, from Nick's perspective, if you're Jack, I'm saying, hey, man, look, I appreciate you. You got me in the door here. You got me a gig that I wasn't on the list for, and I appreciate you. I'm going to give you a year or so to prove your value to this franchise. And if Cal wants to keep you as the team chaplain and on the business side or in another area of the business, I'm fine with that because you did a solid for me and Cal likes you. But from a football perspective, in order for me to put my stamp on this organization, in order for me to see if I am right for this job and prove that I'm capable of doing this position, I can't have you meddling in my stuff or having you going against decisions that I'm going to make. So we're going to have to figure it out. This first year is basically a throwaway year anyway. So we'll allow you the time to do what you need to do while I start the process of doing what I need to do. But after the season's over, we're going to sit down again. And we're going to have to figure out where we're going because you're not going to be doing it on the football side.
Jack Easterby, Executive Vice President, Football Operation. In his role, Easterby manages all football operations and directs the overall culture of this organization. Houston, what would it take for you to jump back on the Texans train, even if Jack Easterby is still employed by the Houston Texans? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Get your reaction to that. Also, best way to handle John Wall. The Rockets go for 5 in a row tonight. That's next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, weekend coming up. We got championship week in college football. We've got the Rockets on the court tonight. We've got NFL football, and we've got all the opportunities for you to bet on it. If you're a soccer aficionado, you know that there's all that soccer across the pond that you can put money down on as well. The only place to do it is at mybookie.ag. Why mybookie.ag? Well, we've all been telling you about the reasons why you go there and not elsewhere. One, your money is safe and secure when you put it in. Two, the fact that when you win, if you want to get paid, you're going to get the money out. You're not going to get someone that hems and haws and encourages you to reinvest it because they don't have it to give it to you in the first place. And they also do promos like the one they're doing right now that makes it even more fun for you and for your friends. That's the new buddy plan that they have going on at MyBookie. You get your buddies involved, and you can get a 250% referral bonus up to $250 as they put in their first bets. All you do is log into MyBookie or set up an account, then click on Refer Your Friends. You'll get a referral link to share with all your buddies via text, email, or social media. Once they get involved and start putting money down, you get to cash in as they get the cash up to start putting on games. It's unlimited. Invite as many friends as you want. You get a referral bonus on each of their first deposits with MyBookie. And, of course, as I mentioned, MyBookie, the best place to bet on sports, live lines on all the games, prop bets, live in-game betting, you name it, they got it. And you can bet any place, anywhere, anytime, from your laptop to your phone to any your tablet, wherever you want to put the money down. And right now, that Refer Your Friends program, 250% referral bonus, up to $250 on their first deposit. Anywhere, anytime, any place. It's MyBookie.
Live from Apollo Men's Health for a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, we're going to give away an opportunity to watch the Lightweight Championship fight on Sunday. Light Championship of the World as Tank Davis, Pitbull Cruz go toe-to-toe Sunday night. Going to give you a pay-per-view code to watch the fight on Sunday. Unbeaten five-time world champion and boxing's hottest attraction, Gervonta Tank Davis, will defend his lightweight championship against hard-hitting Isaac Pitbull Cruz in an explosive showdown Sunday, December 5th at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central, 5 Pacific, live on pay-per-view. Caller number 7 right now to 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Caller number 7 watches the fight for free between Gervonta Tank Davis and Isaac Pitbull Cruz on Sunday night. And a texture at 713-780-3776. We're asked the question, what would it take for you to buy back into the Houston Texans? How would you get back on board? How do you get back on the train? Even if Jack Easterby is around. Mm-hmm. Texture saying, can't root for them. Playing my team this week. Rick. So Rick's looking at the short term. Rick's looking at the short term, saying, well, I can't root for the Texans this week because they're playing my team, the Colts.
But what gives you any hope to root for them next week when they're not?
Well, we want them to lose anyways.
Right. We've already told you that. But at the same time, you asked the question in terms of big picture. The big picture has nothing to do with this season whatsoever. And our point, I mean, you played counterpoint so we could have a discussion about it, but I really believe you're on board with me, too. I think as long as Jack Easterby's there, there's still that hovering black cloud of negativity that won't go away, and it's gonna resonate with all the fans in Houston that are like, how long do we have to endure all of this from Bill O'Brien to the Bill O'Brien tree of suck?
Path of least resistance, the easiest way to get to that point at some point is to get rid of Jack Easterby. I still think you can do it, but it's the hard way. It's the long way. It's going to take a lot of winning. And winning right now is something that the Houston Rockets have been doing lately. They've won 4 in a row. They're going for 5 in a row tonight as they take on Orlando. Rockets are favorites tonight as well. 2.5 home favorites against Orlando. It's a game, in my opinion, you need to lose for lottery implications. Christian Wood probable with the ankle. Kevin Porter Jr., kind of surprising that he's questionable. I thought he was going to miss some time, according to Tim McMahon. Maybe he will at some point miss some time. But the Rockets tonight going for 5 straight against the Magic of Orlando.
Yeah, look, I think it's another opportunity with Jalen Green still out for this team to prove that they're coming together, that they're developing some chemistry. It's funny because of the fact that I said they were going to win against Oklahoma City. I had complete doubt in my mind when you lost not one but two guys that were key components to the winning streak when Wood went down as APJ. The fact that they still found a way to win gives me even more hope that this team is starting to put some things together. And again, I hate to keep pointing my finger at Jalen Green, but I hope Jalen Green, while he's sitting out, is at least taking notice of how he can help keeping the train going forward instead of pulling the emergency brake by going back to doing what he wants to do individually when he comes back. The great thing between this team and a team that we talked about yesterday, like OKC, why, regardless of what the record said, before they even got blown out, their doors blown off by 70 last night. Yeah, I said 70. Is the fact that the veterans, as much as they're looking for good veterans that just want to be there to help the young kids, the good mix of veterans right now, Eric Gordon's trying to find himself a new home by playing his way into having a contending team want to go get him. You've got guys on the roster. Look, Daniel Tice wasn't supposed to play, but when he came in, he hustled. He was doing something. He didn't show up massive in the box score, but he didn't disrupt what they were doing. I like the positive energy around this team right now. I hope nothing disrupts it. With Suggs out for them with a hand injury, so he's not going to play tonight for Orlando, and they're in a similar boat as the Rockets, as we talked about the bottom feeder teams in the NBA. It's another chance to whoop up on another team. You may think that they should probably lose this game because you're worried about the overall end of the season big picture.
I
think for the short term, they should win this game because you know what? The rest of the season, there's going to be plenty of opportunities in the West to get your lunch handed to you. This is a chance for them to at least build some more positive in that locker room.
Yeah, somebody you mentioned got their lunch handed to them yesterday, and you brought it up. Grizzlies beating up on Oklahoma City by 73 points, an NBA record. There used to be a day where 73 points could win some games in the NBA. They got beat by 73, the biggest margin in NBA history. It tops 68 was the previous margin when the Cavs beat the Heat 148-80. Like, how does that even happen?
You had Greg Anthony on TV yesterday saying that a G League team would have put up a better fight than OKC. You had Draymond Green tweeting after the game, you should be fined for something like that as an NBA team to be that embarrassing. That's where you look at it and go, okay, Sam Presti, we get it. I mean, Nick Caserio probably was taking notes about the fact that, look, we understand you're trying to lose games because for the next 3 to 5 years you control a third of the draft picks and you're going to have a chance to really get good. You don't have to be that bad to have the opportunity to get that good in the future. That's putrid. That's embarrassing. That's a negative blemish on the sport and the league of the NBA. No NBA team should ever take a whooping like that.
You know, it's interesting, too, because how did Oklahoma City win 6 games? I mean, you get beat like that.
Beat the Rockets in one of them.
And the Grizzlies aren't even that good. I mean, 500 team, they're 12-10, a little bit above 500, and John Morant's out. Like, I mean, that should not be happening in the NBA. John Wall, does he play again for the Rockets anytime soon?
I would like to say no, because I've said all along he has no business, because if they're going to make the business decision of stupidity of paying a guy $45 million to not play, he also was, that's exactly what he wanted. Now suddenly to appease him yet again, you're supposed to bend over backwards and say, yeah, John says he wants to play, so we'll do it. We'll bring you back in, and no matter how you don't fit with all of our young players, we'll make a space for you. What's that, John? You also say you have to start. Well, let me just make room for you there, too, and continue to appease you. You're paying him $45 million a year. You should earn your way to get minutes back on this team if that's what you so desire. But there's no way, shape, or form, just like James Harden used the joystick to control everybody in the front office till he got what he wanted, John Wall is playing the Houston Rockets, and that for that reason alone, he shouldn't be playing for the Houston Rockets ever again.
I'm fine with John Wall playing, but it's going to take some of the things that you mentioned that need to take the back seat. Like, John Wall should not be dictating terms to you. John Wall should not be starting for this team right away, maybe not even ever. If you want to come back and you want to showcase who you are, that way you could potentially get traded at some point, that's fine. I can give you 10, 15, 20 minutes here and there, but you're not going to be the guy on this team, and you're not telling me how I'm going to run my team, especially whenever it's in the middle of a rebuild. John Wall has been mentioned in a couple of trade rumors. The latest by Bleacher Report that he ends up with the Clippers for Eric Bledsoe, Serge Ibaka, and Luke Kennard.
I don't care for any of them. Kennard's got a way overpaid price tag for a shooter. Your poor man's version of that you already have on the roster with Matthews and with your boy Brooks.
Sweet shooting, Armani Brooks.
I don't think you need to get locked down into any contracts right now any more than the ones that you're trying to shed, like John Wall, Eric Gordon, and maybe even Christian Wood. I don't think any trade makes sense unless it involves close to a one-for-one, so at least you're still eating the years you would have to eat anyway. Maybe you get a couple years, a year and a half from somebody that at least can be serviceable in the process, but then you're completely done with it. And you also reap the benefit of getting some assets, getting some draft picks, getting some things that are going to be useful for you in the future. Otherwise, stop doing favors for other teams, taking on their trash with the high contract, just so that you can move on someone else. The trades that have been made by Rafael Stone so far have not been beneficial to the Rockets like they should have. And in the case of Westbrook, the next move made by Tommy Shepard was far more beneficial for the Wizards. And the same kind of trade the Rockets should have held out to make instead of taking on John Wall. Don't make the same mistake again. Wait and see if John Wall can find a home or orchestrate a three-team trade where the third team is giving you picks that are going to be desirable so you're getting paid for doing the favor like Sam Presti's been able to do. But don't do any more of these trades unless they make sense for you for the future.
I'm okay giving away John Wall without getting a piece in return, a sweetener in return, but I don't like this example of it because Bledsoe under contract for this year and next year, which so is John Wall. Serge Ibaka is a free agent at the end of the year, so that'd be some dead money that you're trading for. But Luke Kennard signed through 24-25. Yeah. Like, that's a deal
at
breaker
a big
for
number.
Me. Yeah, I mean, he's worth 17 or 15. Just under
he's essentially Eric Gordon for the next 5 years.
Not interested. I'm not trying to lock up dudes in the future that are not going to be part of this team going forward. One other name that was mentioned on this Bleacher Report trade rumor thing was Eric Gordon being traded to Dallas. Eric Gordon and Daniel House to Dallas for Willie Cauley-Stein, Josh Green, Dwight Powell, and a 2025 first-round pick. This is one that I would do in a heartbeat. If I'm getting a first-rounder for Eric Gordon, I'm in. I'm doing it.
I'd be interested in the contracts and how long you'd have to take on, but some of the guys are serviceable. I really like Powell. I think he's an energy guy. He's coming off an ACL a year or so ago, but he's been kind of an unsung key piece for the Mavericks in the last couple of years. He's a guy that can give you some of that kind of stretch four-ish minutes where he's going to be active. I want House out. I want Gordon out. I think they would help the Mavericks, but I think that as long as those other contracts don't kind of tie you down too long, you get a first-round pick, you get a guy you can use now, and you get rid of guys that clearly, one guy clearly doesn't want to be there, and the other guy never should still be there after the bubble.
Yep. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. When we come back, we'll be joined by Sam Kahn. He covers football for the Athletic, covers Texas football for the Athletic. He'll be joining us next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. First, we're going to talk to you about this lightweight world championship this Sunday night on Showtime. Big fan of the Sweet Science and a big fight coming up. Showtime pay-per-view Sunday night is the unbeaten five-time world champion, boxing's hottest attraction. Gervonta Tank Davis defends his lightweight championship against the hard-hitting Isak Pitbull Cruz. Can't miss pay-per-view event. Davis, a generational talent who's only getting better, squares off against the hard-hitting and hard-nosed Cruz. Two high-octane fighters, one explosive showdown, Sunday, December 5th at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central, 5 Pacific, live on pay-per-view.
This is a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Apollo Men's Health. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees broadcasting live from Apollo Men's Health in Pearland. Swing on by. We'll be here till 3. You can ask the Apollo Men's Health team about their variety of services while you're here, about the hormone replacement therapy, body composition analysis, and much, much more. We'll be here till 3. They'll be open later than that. Apollo Men's Health Pearland location. Let's go out now to the HRMP guest line. Joining us, Sam Kahn, covers Texas football for The Athletic. Sam, thanks as always for coming on. Headed to the Big 12 championship game tomorrow, Baylor, Oklahoma State. What's the latest on Gary Bohannon? Do you think he's going to play?
Yeah, still not certain about that. I think he's got a chance to play. He practiced earlier this week. They're going to monitor him as they go along. But if he cannot go, Blake Chapin, who started the game last week, I think they're plenty capable. They're plenty confident in him. I think it's the thing that will end up being a game-time decision for them, just based on how he's running around and how he looks in warm-ups. But overall, I think they're comfortable with either guy. I think Bohannon's been great this year, but I think Chapin has brought some really nice assets to the offense. He threw the ball downfield really well against Texas Tech. So I think either way, I think they'll be fine because really what they're going to come and go on their running game with Abram Smith and what they do up front. So that's where they're going to win or lose this ball game.
I'm never surprised by anything the committee does. I was mildly surprised that the committee jumped Ole Miss over Baylor. Is there a path, a possible path, that Baylor could be one of the Final Four?
I doubt it. I don't think there's enough chaos that can go up in front of them for that to happen, especially because Notre Dame's ahead of them right now, and I just don't see a way that they can get in. Oklahoma State is the team in this Big 12 title game that has a chance to get in, and Oklahoma State probably needs either Cincinnati or Alabama to lose to get it in. I wouldn't rule out Oklahoma State jumping Cincinnati, even if Cincinnati won, but I wouldn't expect it to happen. I think they'd have to say that the committee would feel that Oklahoma State is unequivocally better than Cincinnati, and I don't know that you can say that at this point.
Sam, I appreciate you coming on again, man. I got a couple, as you mentioned, Baylor, the couple questions that came to my mind are coaching-related in the state of Texas. One, Aranda, at one point he was rumored at Notre Dame. He's a hot commodity. He came from LSU. Baylor really seems to want to keep him. He's done a nice job. Do you see him having a chance to move on, or is he pretty good staying there? And then the other one that I thought was kind of crazy was Gary Patterson doesn't seem to be long for unemployment, but he's talking to the University of Texas. I'm curious what you know about that.
Yeah, for Aranda, I would not anticipate him moving on in this cycle. I think he's going to stay put at least through this next coaching cycle. He seems to be really happy at Baylor. He's got a really good fit there. I think him being only there 2 years, I think factors into that decision. And he seems to be a fit there. He's not a different. He's a different personality. He's not a very rah-rah guy. He's not going to be a guy that wins the press conference. And I don't think he's looking for a high-pressure situation, which is why I don't think you saw him get in the mix at LSU. He's been at LSU before, but when he was there as a defense coordinator, he was kind of able to fade in the background as a defense coordinator. He didn't have to talk to media very much. He wasn't someone that was under the gun or under pressure. He kind of was able to sit back there and call his defense and teach his guys and just kind of do his thing. I think he likes that at Baylor. They want to win and they want to have success, but they're not going to fire him if they don't win a national championship. And certainly at LSU, they fired Ed Orgeron less than 2 years after winning one. So I don't think he's looking for a situation like that. so I don't anticipate him moving on in this cycle. You know, I haven't heard anything about Oklahoma getting in the mix on him to this point. So, I mean, obviously, if they do, it would be something he would consider, but I would be really surprised if he left. As for Patterson, I think Patterson is somebody who is not going to sit on the sidelines this year. He's going to end up somewhere, whether that's Texas or whether that's somewhere else remains to be seen. I'm curious to see what Gary Patterson is like as a defense coordinator, because he's been running his own show for more than two decades now as a head coach. He's called the shots. He's been the boss. And is he ready to go and be a defense coordinator for somebody else? I think that remains to be seen. I'm curious if there are still any head coaching jobs that he wants to try and get in the mix for, or if any pop up beyond this one, beyond the ones that are out right now. But he would be a really good asset, I think, to any program as a defense coordinator. If he's able just to focus on calling defenses and developing players, I think he's a really, really smart guy, and he's been at the forefront of defensive football for quite some time.
Sam Kahn covers Texas football for The Athletic, so leave it to the wise guy to ask you about the Oklahoma job, because another rumor I saw with Gary Patterson is perhaps he could go be the D.C. if Bob Stoops continues on as the permanent coach at OU. What are you hearing about that coaching search?
Yeah, I would be shocked if it was Stoops. I don't anticipate him staying on for that gig. You know, the name that I have heard the most that makes a lot of sense there is Brent Venables, defensive coordinator at Clemson, who, of course, was there at Oklahoma for a long time with Stoops. But, you know, certainly you would think they're going to kick the tires on Luke Fickell at Cincinnati now that the Notre Dame job is not open and they promoted Marcus Freeman, which that was a place that Fickell probably could potentially have gone. If you're Oklahoma, I think you'd be silly not to vet Fickell and see if he's interested in it, because Fickell has done a fantastic job in Cincinnati. But those would be the two names that I would be most likely to think they would end up there. But I think Venables right now is the one that, from what I've heard, is certainly the favorite candidate from Norman.
Sam, I got to ask you, because we've had different viewpoints. We haven't talked to you in a while, but my question for you is relating to the college football playoff. Where are you in terms of what's the ideal number? How soon does it have to be done? And what would you like to see when we get away from this whole, like, personal bias in a meeting room in hotels as opposed to the computer of the past, and find a scenario that works for all?
Yeah, of the options that they're vetting, I'm a big proponent of the 12-team playoff. I think that's what we should end up doing. The original proposal that they made in June, which was 12 teams, six highest-ranked conference champions, and six at-largest, I think that's a great format. It gets away from designating a automatic bid for conferences, for power conferences. Right now, I guess they are discussing the idea of whether to give five bids for the five power five conferences, one for the group of five. I don't love that. I like the idea of not naming those bids and just having them for the six highest-ranked champions. That way you ensure your six best conference champions are in. In an ideal world, if I was a commissioner of college football, I would have a 16-team playoff. I would allow every conference champion in, which is there's 10 FBS conferences. I would get every one of those 10 FBS conference champions in, and I would get six at-larges. And to me, that takes out a lot of what we have now, which is the meeting rooms and the conjecture and the different standards and different criteria for everybody, the subjectivity. That would get a lot of it out of it. Certainly, you would have to have some, because you would have to select those six at-larges, and in a 12-team playoff, which is, I think, what we'll likely end up with, you're still going to have that aspect of it too. But I would much rather have them debating six at-larges rather than them debating the top four teams in the country out of 130. I think having some guaranteed conference champions, I think, is a good thing, and it makes the conference championship mean something. It makes conference championship weekend huge, and it keeps some other teams in the mix. I think the idea of getting more teams in the mix rather than just having Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State in it all the time, I think it's a good thing for college football. Look at how much interest there is right now with Cincinnati being in the mix and some of these other teams in here that are in this mix. I think that's a good thing for college football long term.
Couldn't agree more. And you mentioned where I was about to go. The team that's looking to make history with the current playoff format is Cincinnati, trying to be the first group of five team that makes it to the Final Four, the college football semifinal. They have to get past Houston tomorrow at Nippert Stadium. How do you see this game? What are a couple of viewpoints that you have on it? And if Houston wins, how do they do it?
Yeah, Cincinnati, I think having the game at home for them is huge. They played really great at Nippert. And it's I think that's a big advantage for them. I think Cincinnati's got to start quick because the way they started against SMU a few weeks ago, I think that's the kind of start they need to try to get their crowd energized and make Houston play from behind. Houston hasn't had to do that very much this year. They've mostly been ahead most of their games. I think the last time they were down by double digits was against Navy on September 25th. Clayton Toon in that offense had to play from behind, so that's allowed Houston to be very balanced offensively. If you're Houston, I think the way you win this game is up front on defense. That defensive line with Derek Parrish, David Anini, DeAnthony Jones, Logan Hall, they're leading the conference in sacks, they're leading the conference in tackles for loss, and to me, if Houston's going to win, they've got to get after Desmond Ridder, and they've got to win on the line of scrimmage on defense. I think that's the biggest thing for them, and of course, they've got to continue to be balanced offensively with Clayton Toon and Alton McCaskill and the collection of backs that they have. Toon, I think, has played really, really well as of late. I think he's really hit his stride. He's taking care of the ball. He's made some really great decisions. And I think Houston's got a real shot in this game based on how good they are up front defensively. I do not like counting against teams that are as good as Houston is up front. So while I know that Cincinnati is a 10-point favorite, I think that's kind of big, and I think that game's going to be a lot closer than that.
Sam, we're running out of time, but before we let you go, because of the fact that, much like you were talking about with Toon, we're talking about Dana. Dana might have been on the hot seat at the start of the year on some people's observations of college coaching because of the fact that since he got the money to come back to Houston, things weren't going so good. Now they're hot. The team's hot. He could be a hot commodity. Do you see Dana actually thinking about leaving U of H, or is this the start of what he's been all hoping for all along to build this up and stay with it? It seems like he likes Houston.
No, I don't see him going anywhere. I think he came back to Houston for a reason. He loves Houston. He loves the city. He knows the program's potential. And the fact that they're going to the Big 12 in a couple of years is a big asset, and they can really raise the profile of this program. You look at what TCU did when they got into the Big 12. Obviously, they were co-conference champion a couple of years after that, and they got themselves to a standard to where now they've made a coaching change because Gary Patterson, the legend who took them to their high status, had fallen off a little bit, and they weren't at that standard. And now they expect to contend for conference championships. Houston, when they go in the Big 12, they're going to have very much that same expectation. After a couple of years of getting acclimated and building up that roster, they're going to expect to compete at that level. And Jamie Holgerson has been in the Big 12. He's been successful in the Big 12 when he was at West Virginia. I think he's going to be there long-term, and I would expect that after this season, they're probably going to work toward some type of contract extension for him, some kind of raise. I don't anticipate that he'd be a candidate anywhere else or that he would leave Houston anytime soon.
Sam, great stuff as always. Thanks for coming on. Enjoy Championship Saturday tomorrow.
No problem. Thanks for having me, guys. Y'all have a good one.
Sam Kahn covers Texas football for The Athletic. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. How cold a winter should we expect in baseball? That's next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Live from Apollo Men's Health for a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Look, it's not a good thing for the sport. It's not something that we undertake lightly. We understand it's bad for our business. We took it out of a desire to drive the process forward to an agreement now.
There you go. Commissioner Robert Manfred, he's saying lockout is bad for business. He's telling you that himself. There's the headline, lockout bad for sport. Robert Manfred, you just love it whenever he's on the podium, right?
Stand him, period.
I don't either. I mean, he's shady. He's corrupt. Yeah. I mean, it's just he learned a lot from Bud Selig. Baseball hasn't had a good commissioner in quite a while.
First of all, who's had a good commissioner aside from David Stern and maybe – because of the fact that Adam Silver had it handed to him on a silver platter, who has had a good commissioner? Gary Bettman left from the league, the NBA, to go to the NHL and watched it just completely plummet.
What about committee chair Gary Barta, who serves as the Iowa Athletic Director?
Solid as a loose poop. Okay, let's keep going.
is Roger Goodell that bad?
I mean, yeah, because you talk about past precedents and the fact that he can't follow any kind of laws that he lays down for himself and decisions that he makes from decision to decision. He's brushed stuff under the rug just as much, protected the owners just as much.
That's his job.
Okay, but at the same time, you're still supposed to protect the sport. And when a governing decision has to be made, when it affects things like the quality of the sport or the players involved in it, you've got to be fair, and he's never been fair.
Has the quality been bad, though? Like, it's never been more popular. They've never made more money. The TV contracts are getting tons. But, I mean, he's the guy.
I understand, but it's, Jeremy, I'm going way past the dollars and cents. I'm talking about how you run the league on a daily basis in terms of treating the teams fairly. You're treating the players with similar situations fairly. Doing the kind of things that a commissioner is expected to do from a judicial standpoint, from a day-to-day process, instead of just the overall things that what you're speaking of really – is exactly what he's supposed to do from an ownership perspective. And a lot of the things, too, there's some certain things that you can blame the Players Association. They just didn't negotiate the right deal and get the things done for their players. But at the same, on the flip side of that, the way he's handled everything from the retired players and the CTE and all the other things, it's so money-driven that he doesn't look for how the longevity of the sport is affected.
How would you rank the top three? Silver, Goodell, and Manfred? Because I would go Goodell, Silver, Manfred.
Oh, no. I'm going Silver, and then I'm going, if I have to choose between the two, I'll say for, and even maybe because of the fact that I'll go Goodell and then Manfred, and simply because Manfred just continues to do worse and worse, but I'm not fans of either two or three.
You just don't like authority. That's what it is. Back to the MLB and MLBPA and what it means with this lockout. Tony Clark, who is the representative of the MLB Players Association. My favorite part of this is they just start trading shots at one another. Here is Tony Clark giving a shot at Major League Baseball for the lockout of players.
It was disappointing that they made the decision to lock players out at this time. It was an unnecessary decision to make, and one against the backdrop of still needing to find a common ground on a deal. And we are more than welcome, are more than interested, more than available to sit down and continue those discussions.
All right, so there's Tony Clark saying, look, we're willing to talk. We're willing to have a conversation with Major League Baseball, that they're not very serious with this. Well, how about the other side? How about Robert Manfred again on why they instituted the lockout?
After the owners' meeting in Chicago, I made clear the rationale for an off-season lockout. It's the norm in professional sports, and we feel it's the best strategy to protect the 2022 season for the benefit of our fans. We made the mistake of playing without a collective bargaining agreement in 1994, and it cost our fans and our clubs dearly. We will not make that same mistake again.
What side are you on this? Or do you even take an aside? MLBPA, MLB?
Look, I think as I told you, I don't think they were nearly as close as they wanted everybody to believe while they were still, quote-unquote, working on resolution, and we were going to get to this point where we were going to find the Grand Canyon-sized gap and divide that they were going to have to try to divide and conquer, to bring together and conquer if they were going to make this thing work. There's no pressing sense of urgency, but I think from a player's perspective, you better hope you got the right people in place to change some things, because in terms of contracts, structure, vulnerability of the players until they get to a certain age and status when they're probably not the player they once were, and all the other things that go into it, as well as from our standpoint, things like the designated hitter and all the ridiculous circus of rules they put into for the regular season to worry about time of play and games when baseball is going to be baseball regardless, and it's going to take some time. They better have the right people negotiating from a player's perspective. They got worked in the last one.
They did.
They can't get worked again.
I think that's why they're so far apart, at least in terms of like just getting together and meeting. I stand by what I've been saying all along, that I feel like the things that they're arguing really aren't that far apart. The reason that it seems so far away from getting a deal done is because you have pettiness on both sides, and you have pride and ego on both sides, and I think you have hurt feelings on the MLBPA side because they got screwed over on the last CBA, and now they're trying to win this CBA plus the one that they lost. They're trying to get like revenge on that. So I still like the deals, like the free agency. When a player reaches free agency, like they're both, I think, okay with 29 and a half years old, but you have Major League Baseball that wants to keep it at 6 years of service time. MLBPA wants 5 years of service time. Like that's how close it is. You're talking about the 1 year there. The competitive balance tax, which is currently at 210. You saw both sides go to $30 million above or $30 million low, but we've even heard from Jeff Passan of ESPN that they're even willing to go up to 215 to 220, but scale it over time, over years. Arbitration is something that is probably going to be a sticky point in terms of like how much service time you have to have until you're arbitration eligible, but I really don't feel like they're that far apart. Why I feel like it's going to be a long winter and why it's going to take a long time for this to get done is because they just can't stand each other. They hate each other.
I don't think that either. I think the reason why I think it's going to take a long time to get done is there's nothing pressing them to get a deal done.
That's true.
The fact that everybody was so worried about this deadline the other day, except for the two sides involved, because if they were concerned at all and passionate about it and getting a deal done, they wouldn't have had the first meeting the day before last 30 minutes and the second meeting last 7 when they were in the
franchise
same city with the ability to work as hard as they possibly could to get it done.
No, I think they
is that over the air?
I don't know where we
got to
that.
Something's in our ear, but I'm not sure if it's over the air or not. But the other interesting thing, too, is like how this is getting swept under the rug a little bit, and not the CBA as we segue off of that, but the two baseballs that were being used this past season, and Major League Baseball flat out admitted that they were doing that. Like, what would be the comparison of using, like, baseball used two balls last year? What's the cross-sport comparison here?
So I think, but it wouldn't be as – you wouldn't be as able to kind of sweep it under the rug. But I when in thinking about this one – last night, it was like from the standpoint of when you get a guy in college basketball, and you know the college game, with the synthetic basketballs that they use in college. They're lighter. The material of the skin of the ball is grippier. It has a different feel to it. When you get to the NBA, it's a full leather grain basketball. It's heavier. It has a different feel. And a lot of guys take a long period of time, even if they're sharpshooters, to adjust to the new ball. The players from this year to last year, from Spalding to Wilson, had a hard time adjusting to the ball. But it would be so that the ball looked exactly the same. You couldn't tell. Like, you and I could look at a college basketball and an NBA game ball and pick them apart in 2 seconds. But it would have to be where the ball looks aesthetically the exact same way, but it had the reaction of the college basketball on some nights, and it had the reaction of the leather basketball on another night. And from the NFL perspective, similarly, if a ball, you know, they inflate to whatever pounds kind of thing, and we had Deflategate, but on a consistent basis, you just, at your own whim and discretion, decided, well, there's a game in cold weather today. Let's lighten up the ball a little bit so it floats a little bit more, and let's do this on the – and also – both leagues would have to be the sole proprietary ownership of the company that produces said game balls.
Yeah, to me, this is criminal, to be honest with you.
It is.
Like, I mean, Manfred should be thrown into jail over this. The fact that you're influencing games the way that you did, whenever you have people that are betting on over and unders and they're playing daily fantasy, it's criminal, in my opinion, that Robert Manfred had that much sway and influence on the way that the ball was traveling last year and didn't tell anybody either. Like, that's the thing, is that you hit it, you covered it up, you swept it under the rug. Brother Breyer has a pretty good comp. If the NBA uses the WNBA ball for half of their games, because again, they oversee these balls. The WNBA ball is smaller, so you're going to make more shots, which means you're going to have more points.
Same difference, exactly what I was talking about. It's just that they have to look exactly the same. You know, the oatmeal and orange that I used to work for with the WNBA, you can tell right away from the eye test which is which. Major League Baseball, unless you were a player on the field and you could tell the difference in the feel, or you were holding the different baseballs as a pitcher or an infielder or anybody on the field to play in a uniform, that's the only way that the truth is known, because they could tell. We can't tell. Visually, we could tell if a WNBA ball was in play instead of an NBA ball just because of the size difference, before we get to the color of the actual ball itself.
I think I have a good one for you.
All right.
And it's because Showtime's got a big lightweight championship
Boy,
of the Brenda's world on
fired
Sunday.
Up about this
how
fight.
About the different weight of gloves? Because you have, good. I mean, that's always a negotiation tactic too. In these big fights, it's like how many ounces of gloves are you going to use? And they look the same. You couldn't tell that from the naked eye. What if one dude has 1 ounce, 12 ounce gloves, the other guy has 15 ounce gloves, whatever the case may be? Like, that would be something that would influence certainly.
But at least the said fighter would know. Whereas if you get the WBC or whatever the governing body is and say, hey, for this fight, slide old boy these gloves as opposed to give this guy these gloves. From a golf perspective, and you know as well as I do, there's juiced golf balls too.
Good one.
That would be another one where, because there's so many different brands in the game of golf, but you'd have to have the PGA Tour control all the golf balls and say, on a given day, get with the company and say, hey, you make sure that you give Bubba Watson and Dustin Johnson and DeChambeau this golf ball, and we'll give everybody else the other golf ball. We want the playing field even. We want someone else to win this week.
But what's weird about that, though, is like the harder ball and the further that you drive the ball, the worse it is around the green. So it's like a little bit, you know, you're robbing for Peter, paying Paul.
But some with the core of a golf ball, the different cores in a golf ball. Like it can look and feel the same, and you can have the same kind of touch on it maybe on the putting green, but the way it, the ball flight and the way it and had the distance. We know they're all dialed into distances, yeah, too. That's where it would really screw
How about
it.
A Sammy Sosa corked bat? Remember when that bat exploded and there was cork all over the field?
Sure,
man, how dirty was that dude?
Super Bowls.
How dirty was Sammy Sosa? He had the he was roided to the gills, and then on top of that was also using a corked bat.
He came in as a 180-pound center fielder. I saw him in the Galleria one day. He was so cheap he wouldn't buy new pants after the steroids. He was going up the escalator. The outline of his wallet, which was as thick as a Yellow Pages, was like protruding out of his pants pocket because he had gotten that massive over the course of his career.
Well, he might have cheated then. He might have used cork bats then, but now he's pure as snow. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Whenever we come back, is there an overreaction to the current state of affairs with the Houston Texans? That's next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
But the great people that we are working with right here at Apollo Men's Health today, I love these people. You know why? Because they make a difference in people's lives on a daily basis, including mine. I come here every Friday. I love seeing the smiling faces, but I love even more the fact that they get me results because they do what they say they're going to do. Dr. O and his staff are experts in their field. What they do is they bring back the energy in your life. They handle your business for you. Your health is your wealth. You got to invest in yourself. It starts with the people at Apollo Men's Health, from the boardroom to the weight room to the bedroom. If you're having problems, they can get you solutions. You want a program? They'll put you on one. You want results? They're going to get it for you. You know why? Because they've been there, done there at the other places and figured out what works, what doesn't, what's just a straight cash grab, and what's not necessarily worth your time. They weed out all the stuff you don't need to get you absolutely what you do to get you feeling better on a daily basis. That starts with all the different ways that they have hormone therapy for men and for women, so you can come in and check out all the ways they can help you from that regard. If you want to get on a workout program, you do a full body composition analysis. It takes less than 60 seconds, and you chart your progress on a weekly basis. If you want to recover quicker, HGH peptide therapy. You need something for your smoothies or some fat burners with your vitamins in the morning, all under one roof, two locations to better serve you, both near downtown Houston. Go to apollomh.com right now and sign up. You're going to find out. Get that first appointment scheduled. Most major insurance is accepted. Discounts for military personnel, first responders. More so than anything else, be honest with them when they ask the tough questions. You give them answers. They get you results. It's the good people at Apollo Men's Health.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand-new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.